The views expressed on this podcast are only those of the individuals featured on the show and do not in any way reflect the official policy of the United States government.
You are listening to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. We believe wealth isn't just about finances and money. It includes health, relationships, and anything else that makes you excited to get up in the morning. On this show, we interview members of the foreign affairs community to see how they're building wealth, both personally and financially, no matter where they're posted. I'm Tanya Salseth. Let's get to today's show. We just finished talking to Alyssa Redman, and what an incredible story. She talks about being a Peace Corps volunteer on the island of Fiji and not having enough books and feeling like she was on a desert island without those books to read. And she talks about her journey from the Foreign Service to owning a bookstore in small town America and the incredible impact that a little business can have on a community and also on her family and how she's making that work and not just making it work, but being incredibly successful at it. I mean, what a story. We are very excited to talk this morning with Alyssa Redmond, who is the owner of South Main Book Company in Salisbury, North Carolina. Alyssa is from North Carolina, and she lives there with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters. And prior posts have been India, Afghanistan, Washington, D.C., Hong Kong, and Bolivia. She's currently on leave without pay status, and we're interested to hear her story about how she decided to start something brand new, kind of post or middle of her career, shall we say. So, Alyssa, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tanya. Thanks, Josh. I'm so happy to be here with you guys finally.
We're excited you're here too. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about how the bookstore started. I mean, what was the idea for it? I think a lot of Foreign Service officers have this idea about, well, you know, I'd love to start a B&B or I'd like to open a little bookshop. Or, I mean, it sounds very romantic and dreamy. Is it the reality?
I have to say it kind of is. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I've never been happier in my life. So I'll just put that right out there to begin with. So thank you guys for having me. We were just chatting about how many years we have with the Foreign Service. And I think I'm somewhere around the 12-year mark. I was in Bolivia in fall of 2019, and I arrived there just in time for the presidential election and didn't have a background in South America, didn't really have a clear understanding of what I was getting in for. But very quickly after the presidential election, which we monitored, things went a little pear-shaped, and it became abundantly clear that I was going to need to make arrangements for my then 4-year-old daughter to be evacuated from post. So we'd been at post for maybe 4 months when that seemed inevitable. And I had, as you said, served in war zones, served in difficult places. And I had really chosen the posting in Bolivia to be a soft place to land, where we could really focus on being a family, and bringing my then 4-year-old daughter's sister, biological sister from Hong Kong, into our family. And that was where my head was really at. And so when the call came down that we were going to have to get her out, there was no way that I was, you know, not going to go with her. I'm a single mother. I adopted Margaret at my posting in Hong Kong. And so I think I had a week or two where it seemed like we were going to get evacuated. We weren't getting evacuated in that moment. There was a lot of protests and different things going on in the streets, sometimes right in front of our neighborhood in the middle of the night. And it wasn't clear how long that situation was gonna last and when we'd be able to come back to post, and thinking that we were going to have to go back to DC where we had just been for language training. And my daughter, I think at that point, had been in 4 preschools. And I just thought, you know, I'm going to apply for LWOP, see if I can get it. And it's a leave without pay, get 3 years, then that's going to give us enough time to complete the second adoption from a steady place. I was having so many difficulties getting social workers to do home visits because I kept moving. So it looked like the second adoption was just never going to happen. So that became the focus, just finding a soft place to land. And I was looking at real estate options in Charlotte, which is where my brother lives. And I wasn't finding anything. I wasn't seeing a house that really spoke to me for whatever reason. And sitting at my desk in the consular section in La Paz, Bolivia, and I Googled bookstores for sale near Charlotte, North Carolina. And I stumbled across this beautiful bookstore and took a couple looks at the pictures and reached out to the person that was in charge of the sale. And asked a couple questions, had a phone conversation, and it just rapidly kind of took over all of the thoughts that I had in my head. And it was such an emotional time for so many different reasons. But I had entertained the idea of going on LWOP a number of times previously or separating from the service entirely. And I could never figure out what the next step would be. I have been so fortunate to have had so many incredible experiences with the department, and I could never think of what I could leave it for, what would take over, you know, that piece of me. And I still wanted to work and build something and be a part of a community, and leaving the department for another, you know, government organization or even for a nonprofit, I couldn't see it. I couldn't see how it would be fulfilling. I walked into this bookstore with my daughter, and we went to the back of the children's section, and she grabbed an Elephant and Piggy book. And by the time we'd paid for it, I just looked at the owner who was ringing it up, and I was like, yeah, I'll be in touch. I'm the one that's been nagging you from Bolivia. We're here. And so I put in an offer, and I had taken out a TSP loan. And just to have a large cushion, because I really just didn't know where this evacuation was going to take us. We flew from Bolivia to my brother's house on a Saturday, and my brother and I looked at cars online, and I bought one the next day. I bought a Volvo, which was my dream car, drove immediately to Salisbury and took a look at the bookstore, and then had a couple drive around with a real estate agent and realized that this could be the perfect landing spot for us. So I was able to purchase the business outright with cash, because business loans as a non-business owner are difficult to obtain. And then started looking at securing a mortgage for a house and realized that as a newly created small business person, I wasn't going to qualify for a mortgage anymore, which was a shock after having owned properties previously as a Foreign Service officer and being able to qualify for ridiculously large mortgages. We have been renting a house down the street from my bookstore in the historic downtown area of Salisbury. And we have a really idyllic life. I can't complain at all. The store is on the main street of town. My daughter walks to school with me every morning. She goes to a little kindergarten around the corner, and we live in an old historic house. And we're a huge part of a community that I was a Peace Corps volunteer after college. And then I worked for a while in the mayor's office in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. And with my background in state too, I've always felt like I was doing community development projects of different degrees, but I never really felt invested in the community that I was living in, because I always knew it had an expiration date. I always knew I was moving on to the next thing, the next post or whatever. And with this store, I mean, I'm still on LWOP, and I'm still very indecisive with what the future holds immediately. But this is my long-term community. Salisbury is where I will retire. I will have this business on the day I die, probably, because it has given us so much stability at a time when life has been so unpredictable. And it was just such a blessing to be here during COVID and not in the department. And I'm happy to talk about that more too, but to have the freedom to create my days as I want to, and the freedom to raise my kids as I want to, the freedom to really be present for them right now, that has meant everything to me. And so I'm always going to be grateful to this town for welcoming me and continuing to shop in the store when I took over as an owner from out of nowhere. it's just been a wonderful fit. And it wasn't in my back pocket. I never thought, you know, oh, if I leave, I definitely want to have a bookstore. It was just this thought when I was looking at real estate options in Charlotte, like, oh, well, maybe I'd want to have a part-time job while I'm waiting on this adoption. Maybe I'd work at like Barnes and Noble or something. And it really was a stream of consciousness Google search that How led funny. Me to this. And everybody in my family thought I was insane for thinking of buying a bookstore. I mean, it was so out of character for me. I didn't take business classes growing up. I never thought about being a small business owner. I will say, all of my pouch shipments were extremely heavy as a Foreign Service officer because they always had books in them. I was always buying books. I was always looking for books for my kid, and that was the bulk of my shopping experience online as a Foreign Service officer. I was buying books. And so that was in the back of my head when I was looking into next steps. I looked at my shopping habits and I looked at where my money was speaking to me, and it was books. That was the only thing I really had an interest in. I've been a reader since I was 3. That has sustained me. As a Peace Corps volunteer, I ran out of books occasionally in Fiji, and that was just the nightmare. And I've become a book hoarder because of that feeling of being on a desert island with no books and having to reread books that I didn't enjoy because they were the only option for me. And so I've really taken it next level. I mean, I have a 3,000 square foot building full of books that is just getting more and more and more full. But yeah, and everybody thought I was crazy for buying a bookstore in the age of Amazon because I'm not even trying to compete with Amazon. I mean, if you want a cheap book, there are so many options for you, and I cannot afford. The margins are so small on a book. I mean, that's why bookstores are going out of business, because at best, when you're buying a book from an independent bookstore, at best, that bookstore is making half of the profit off of the sale. And really, when you think about it, when you think about what goes into creating a book, I mean, the author, and if you're buying a children's book, the illustrator, they're making a couple cents on the dollar. The publishing house is taking a huge risk and a huge gamble to create a book. And right now, especially with COVID, the production of a book, taking it to a print shop and getting it printed and bound and then on some sort of truck for delivery, the warehousing of book and the space that they require, those costs are astronomical in comparison to the low purchase price of a book. And that's why the price of books is slowly increasing as well, because it takes a lot of creativity and warehouse space to hold a book. And so that's really how Amazon has been able to become the behemoth that they are. They have so much warehouse space, and now their logistical network is, you know, untouchable. And those costs are what are driving up the price of books, and they're able to meet that demand and keep the cost low for their customers. So if you want a cheap book, go to Amazon. Don't go to my website. I'll say, I mean, having only been able to attend one conference in person with other booksellers, but now being a part of several different unions and associations of booksellers, I mean, there's no better people. I have really loved getting to know all of the other booksellers in the country and seeing their dedication to their communities and all of the inspiring things that they're doing to not only stay relevant, but to really serve their communities. I went to the American Booksellers Association conference in Baltimore last January, right after I bought the bookstore. And I'm pretty sure I got COVID on the train, but that's another story. And because it was right before everything went pear-shaped. So meeting other booksellers all over the country and hearing about how they were struggling, and this is pre-COVID, struggling to remain relevant, struggling to keep their doors open, struggling to pay their employees a living wage, struggling to have health insurance for themselves, much less their employees. There's so much wrapped into the American experience when you start talking to a bookseller. But then following their stories as COVID unfolded and seeing how some of us were so fortunate to remain in communities where we were able to qualify as educational providers of materials. And that allowed me never to shut my doors during COVID. I've been open for browsing for the entirety of the pandemic. It was a very personal choice. I felt like I was putting my child at risk. I was putting myself at risk for remaining open. But I also felt that if I were to close my doors, I'd probably never reopen them. That happened for quite a number of booksellers who didn't have the choice. So many communities, you couldn't be open. So many different states had different regulations. And I chose to remain open because the people that were coming in my store were A, loyal, devoted shoppers who had been with the store for over 20 years. The store's been in existence long before I came to it. And they wanted to make sure that it remained a part of their community. But also, they were binge buying. And I had a very successful year last year.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think, right? I mean, I guess from the pandemic perspective, mm-hmm. I mean, if you're at home and you're a reader, you're like, well, I got plenty more time to read now, so why not stock up? But yeah. That it's kind of surprising, actually, to hear that you did even better than you expected, because, you know, a lot of people were scared to go out of their houses. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And we were able to also cater to those people. I shortened my hours substantially so that I could meet that demand and deliver books in the afternoons. And so I was running out to people's cars in the street and passing books to them through the window. But I was also going to people's homes and leaving a bag of books on their front stoop. And I was going to retirement homes too and leaving books with the front desk. And that really felt like a huge service every time I was able to do that, because there was just nobody that I was more afraid for in that moment. And so knowing that I was able to give people some comfort, I mean, that was just huge. When I moved to Salisbury, I had about a week or two when I was waiting for the sale to go through before I took over the business. And so I reached out to a number of different community members whom I thought I wanted to be connected to for any number of reasons. But the school system was the one that I really wanted to have a connection to, just because I thought, you know, teachers read and they read to their students. And so obviously I want to have an in with the school system so that they ever need to order books for libraries or teachers, that people think of us before moving to Amazon, if at all possible. And so I had a really good connection and some really good meetings right before COVID with the head of the library system for the school system here in Salisbury. And I reached out to her when COVID started impacting the opening and closing of schools. And I asked her, there was a front page news article in our local paper, which is fantastic. And they were talking about how so many kids were not only getting homework and books off of the bus system that was coming through to deliver stuff to kids early on in the pandemic. And they were doing like mobile iPad checks because every kid was on the iPad and doing all this stuff. But they were also getting food off the buses that were coming through the neighborhoods. And that really got me thinking about the level of poverty in our community and if there was anything I could do to try to help those kids who I thought were probably silently suffering through so many things that we're still not really aware of for the last year. And so I reached out to the librarian, head of library services, and I said, is there anything that I can do to help you? I know that you're delivering different things to kids, and I don't know how many books they have at home. And if I could, you know, start giving you books for the bus drivers to have like a mobile library on their school bus, you know, whatever we can do to creatively try to get books in the hands of kids right now. I don't really care about the cost. I just want to help. And they said that they were having a lot of trouble logistically with their busing and getting food to kids and different things. And adding one more step to it would be just overwhelming. But every school in the county has a little free library. And presumably all of the children in this area live close enough to get to that location. So why don't you start donating more books to the little free libraries, and then we'll help publicize that. And I said, oh, that's so easy. I can start doing that today. And so I just started filling them. I got a lot of really good press for doing that. And it was so easy. I just pulled some old books off the shelf and threw in some Harry Potters and would ride around with my daughter and fill little libraries every day. And we had so much fun doing it. And we were seeing all of the different schools and communities in our little neighborhood, and we were just having a great time with it. And then that kind of spiraled into something much, much larger when about 2 or 3 months into that project, there was a statue right around the corner from my bookstore, just off Main Street, basically at the four corners of Main Street and a large street in town. And it had been there for about 100 years. Some people called it the Angel, and it was a Confederate monument. It was built in Europe, and Daughters of the Confederacy, they had spent thousands and thousands of dollars 100 years ago raising money to have it created and brought over, and it had just a very long history in the town. And so, of course, there was a lot of controversy around the discussion of moving it, as many other communities were facing last summer in the wake of George Floyd's murder, and how we could create an anti-racist society. And there was a list that started going around on Facebook of businesses that supposedly supported the move of fame. And it was created by some unknown entity and posted on a Facebook group that didn't really have a clear identity. And we were on that list. We were on a list of 30 or 40 businesses in town that were targeted to be boycotted because we supposedly supported the move of the statue. And I had just moved to town, didn't know anything about this statue other than that it was around the corner, and had never said anything publicly one way or the other about it. But
you were singled out all the same.
Well, and so immediately after that list went around, I had the busiest day in my store of all time because everyone wanted to come and shop in those stores and demonstrate that they were not racist, which was lovely. And people were saying, oh, thank you for identifying all the businesses that I need to support in this town.
So it had the exact opposite effect of what the person who created the list intended, it sounds like.
Immediately. And so I felt just a little bit shocked that someone would target my business and my livelihood and the future of my child because they thought that I had some stake in this statue, which I didn't before it showed up on my door front. And then I was like, well, you know what? I'm raising a child who is not biologically my own, and who was born in Asia. And I want to create a community for her that is accepting and loving and open. And whoever this person is who targeted my store, I want them to know that they have unleashed a beast. And watch out. I immediately started ordering every anti-racist title that I could find that I wanted to fill in the Little Free Libraries. And I created a GoFundMe account and raised over $10,000 within like a week or something.
Wow.
To order more titles. Then I started writing articles. I ended up being like the number one most read article on LitHub, which is a pretty good blog about, you know, literacy and reading in America, writing about how Confederate monument enthusiasts had targeted my store, and it backfired comically because it really did.
It rallied the community behind you.
It did. Yeah. And I was so grateful. But then, I mean, people were just sending me cash in the mail and saying, do whatever you want with this. We want you to feel comfortable
support.
Here.
Yeah.
people were sending me cards, and it was so amazing. And it's just, I have met so many lovely people in my community through this bookstore. And that's the extreme example of how it's kind of self-selecting, you know. The people that come into my store in general are the people that are going to wear a mask and are going to be respectful of my health. And that's why I never really felt like I was putting myself and my family at grave peril keeping the store open during the pandemic, because there were just so many lovely people coming through my door every day and telling me how they felt inspired by what I was doing in the community. So now I'm on the flip side of that, where I'm working with the United Way. They every year give scholarships to kids who are going on to college, and also to elementary school and middle school kids too, for different service projects. They call it Service Above Self. I've had 3 or 4 different groups just contact me and say, hey, we won the grant. Like, they didn't contact me ahead of it to say they were thinking about it. They just say, hey, we won the grant and we have a $200. And so we're going to buy some books in your store, and then we're going to put them in the little free libraries. And we just wanted to send you our list so that you could have the books ready when we come in. And it's
fantastic.
It's just incredible. It's all of these things are just coming together that I never, you know, I never consciously set out to buy a bookstore. I never consciously set out to live in a community that is, you know, it's kind of on the cusp here. Our city is very liberal, but our county is very conservative. And we have a real mixed bag of political discussions. I've just been kind of in the mix for all of the things that you've been hearing about, you know, in the news for the last year about what's going on in America politically and on the public health front and otherwise. And so I've been able to see so much of the positive and the negative of what our country has been going through. And it's just been so inspiring to me. And I feel like the creative possibilities are endless for me here. And so I've never felt that overwhelming need to reconsider. It's a hard sell for me to go back to the department right now. I'm right at the point where I need to start thinking about bidding if I'm going to go back next summer. And the thought,
the dreaded bidding. Yes, yes.
The thought of writing to my CDO and saying, hey, I'm thinking about coming back. Could you tell me what's out there and what I might be eligible for? The thought of writing that email, it's very difficult to do. And I'm so grateful that I still have that option. And I am definitely tempted by the educational experiences that my kids could have overseas if I were to go back. And so I'm very on the fence about it. And I want to see how the girls do. I found a charter school for them that's about 20 minutes away. It's called Carolina International School. And it is a very diverse community for students and administrators and teachers alike. A lot of opportunities for them to learn about other cultures while remaining in North Carolina. And it's on like 40 or 80 some acres of land. They have a stocked lake where the kids learn how to fish. It sounds perfect.
It sounds great.
And if the kids love it, which I'm really hoping they will, then I think that's it. It's a public school. It makes everything sustainable for us.
Well, I mean, given your story, I mean, I'm just impressed at how, you know, you arrived in a place where you were essentially an outsider, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, the community embraced you, and you kind of got caught up in sort of the things that were going on, you know, kind of the greater story that's played out across America in the last year and a half, and the community rallied and got behind you and felt that what you were doing was important. I can't even imagine having to make a decision about saying, well, maybe I'll go back to the department after you have that kind of experience, right? I mean, yeah, you impact people's lives in that aspect. And it's a really tough decision to decide, do I go back, right? I think a lot of people on leave without pay, you know, kind of come to that point and they have to really think about it. And it sounds like, I mean, you've had a amazing experience. Despite COVID, despite, you know, being new, despite all kinds of challenges that self-employed small business owners face at the very beginning. And I mean, you're right. I could see how your family would think, oh, you're totally crazy buying a bookstore in the age of Amazon. And you've made it work. So, I mean, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it hasn't. And it's not effortless, but it's just felt so rewarding. And it's such a natural fit into my life now. And the girls are like I'm the bookstore lady. When I go to the farmer's market, people yell,
they know you,
bookstore lady. And the girls are known as the bookstore girls. And it's just, I never would have imagined that we would stumble upon what we have fallen into. But it's really hard to think about taking them back into the system. And I think the thing that I've really grown to appreciate so much is just having control over my days, because I've followed so many Foreign Service Officer stories over the past year and known people that were stuck in really just terrifying situations where they didn't have any control over their health care and mm-hmm. the choices that they made for their children. And it's hard to think about going back into that system at this point. So yeah, that's where I'm at. Very much, my headspace is very much there right now. Cause I do feel like I kind of need to make some decisions, and I have been talking to people in the community about, you know, do you want to run the bookstore for a couple years if I go to Japan? And I know that there are people that would have my back if I left, and it wouldn't be the end of the bookstore. That's the thing, really. I think I feel like such a steward of this store for the community. And I don't want it to disappear for them. Mm-hmm. And I don't want it to disappear for my family either. I mean, this is the most dreamy retirement gig that I've dreamed up for myself. Like that space isn't going anywhere. So
love it.
If I were to step away from the store, it would be a temporary thing for sure. But so we should create some sort of like poll and have people write in.
People vote, oh dear. But then you're back to, you know, being in the system where someone else decides your fate for you, right?
I know, right?
Which is not what us self-employed small business owners like to do. So, no. I mean, I'm on leave without pay as well, although everybody thinks I've left, right? I mean, and it's a choice, right? You know, you have to think about, do I go back? If I go back, what does that look like after I've had this experience of being able to choose my own hours and be very free, right? Mm-hmm. It's an adjustment. And mm-hmm. so, you know, it's a big decision. And also too, you want to continue what you're building and the impact that you're having there in Salisbury. I'm curious, how many people live in Salisbury? Is it considered like a small town?
There's about 35,000 people here.
Okay. So it's not teeny tiny, but it's, you know, it's smaller. It's not a big metropolitan area.
The thing about it that's so incredible is that we're right off of 85 and we're dead center between Charlotte and Winston-Salem and Greensboro. And mm-hmm. so people can easily get here and people are always passing through. And there are four universities in Salisbury. There are multiple theaters. There's a symphony, and there's so much going on in this little town because it is a little town. It is idyllic. There's a huge, thread of preservation and historic preservation work that goes on in the community. There's a huge historic district where so many beautiful houses are. And there's also the North Carolina Transportation Museum is here.
So there's things to do. You're not way out in the sticks.
Mm-hmm. I'm really not. No. And people know it in the area. People mm-hmm. know to come to Salisbury, and they know to come to the downtown area to shop because it's a historic downtown shopping district. And there's a lot of growth opportunities in the area too. And so it's an exciting place to be. It's small, but it's not a backwater by any stretch. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I've been reading a lot of local authors, and we've got some really great folks who were born in our community, born close by. And so I've been recommending for summer beach reads. We have a woman who lives in our town who just hit the New York Times bestseller list for the first time. Her name is Christy Woodson Harvey, and she wrote a book called Under the Southern Sky, which is a beachy romance, but it also has a lot of depth and a lot of information about how a woman processes becoming a parent. And it's not just a woman, too. I mean, there's some male-centric discussion as well about, you know, when is the right time to become a parent and what is the ideal setting, and do you have any real control over those options? It's a great little book. So I've loved putting that in people's hands this summer. And there's another great book coming from Wiley Cash at the end of this summer. He's based in Wilmington right now, and also writes, he works at the University of North Carolina in Asheville, and he was born in a town not far from us, but it's called When Ghosts Come Home. And it's a thriller set in the 80s on Oak Island, which is just south of Wilmington, North Carolina. And it's all about a mysterious plane crash in the middle of the night that awakens the sheriff. And he stumbles on the scene at the airport to find a dead body on the runway and one tiny plane that has crashed on the runway, and how did all of this happen, and what does this mean for his community? So those are some really great local reads. But then I just put in your hands V.E. Schwab's The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue. So I can't wait for you to read that. But that was my favorite book of last year, just totally genre bending. A really beautiful kind of work of historical fiction about a woman who makes a deal with the devil to avoid a marriage. She receives the gift of eternal life, but the compromise is that no one will ever remember her. So someone can be looking at her, talking to her for a night, and then they turn around, wash their hands, look back at her and say, "Who are you? Why are you in my house?" And so she's utterly forgettable. And yet she finds this way to have a huge impact on art and culture. And I found it to be just an incredible book. And it really spoke to me about, you know, the impact that people can have, large and small, in their communities and on their art scene. I found a lot of inspiration in that and some of the things that I was going through last year. So those are a couple of them, but I've got a ton. And people can always check out our staff picks on our website or on our bookshop.org site, which I do want to make a plug for Foreign Service officers, because I was doing this too. I was guilty of shopping on Amazon constantly, to the detriment of our entire society. Please stop buying things on Amazon, especially books. Support independent bookstores and go to bookshop.org and plug in South Main Book Company as the beneficiary of your sales, or the small bookstore that's closest to the town that you're partial to, that you plan to retire to, or that you were born in. But that is saving independent bookstores across America right now. And it's called bookshop.org. They cut checks to any of the stores that sign on to be a member and affiliate of their program. And their goal is to take 2-3% of Amazon's book sales within 5 years of being operational. It's been around since just before COVID. But if they do that, they know they will have saved dozens of independent bookstores, and they will not have made a dent in Jeff Bezos's pocket. So if you haven't heard about it, check out bookshop.org, please.
Amazing. Well, Alyssa, thanks so much for talking to us this morning. We really loved your story, and we hope that it inspires other people in the Foreign Service community to to go on Google with whatever dream they have, because it actually isn't that difficult from the way that you make it sound. You just follow your heart. You follow the idea that speaks to you, and you can have really an incredible experience. So thank you so much for sharing your story.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not the end of the world if you do leave the department. And I'm so grateful to all of the opportunities that I had, but yeah, it's easier than you think. And once you jump off, you might find a lot at the other side of this career that is just as fulfilling.
If you like this episode and want more, make sure to give us 5 stars on the podcast player of your choice. And after that, check out our Facebook page. From there, you can learn about our other episodes, connect with our guests, and of course, share your own ideas for success. We'll see you next time.